Welcome to this introduction to the 39 steps of the New Vic Theatre. I'm Tracy Wainwright, and I'll be audio describing the play along with Pam Beach. The show is around 2 hours, 10 minutes long, and includes one interval of 20 minutes after the first 55 minutes. There'll be a touch tour prior to the audio described performance. However, at the time of this recording, the start time is still to be confirmed. If you've booked for the touch tour, we'll be in contact to let you know the start time nearer to the performance. The 39 Steps was a spy novel written by John Buchan, published in 1915. There have been several film adaptations, and the original concept of a four-actor play was adapted by Patrick Barlow in 2005. Teresa Heskins is directing this adaptation for the New Vic stage. Following on from our hugely successful productions of Around the World in 80 Days and Astley's Astounding Adventures, this spy drama gets the New Vic treatment. Set in the 1930s, this thrilling, inventive and fast-paced caper follows Richard Hannay, an all-round good guy who finds himself in a bit of a pickle when he wakes up to find a mysterious woman dead in his apartment. And what are the 39 steps? For your information, this fun-packed production includes stage smoke and some rather loud bangs. I'll now tell you about the auditorium, set, locations, and then Pam will give you information about the characters and costumes. The New Vic is a theatre in the round. Tiered seats rise all around a flat circular stage. The front row of the audience seating is on the stage itself. There are three evenly spaced tunnel-like entrances, which rise up onto the stage. Two entrances are used by actors and audience, and the third, slightly larger main entrance, is used only by the actors. Thinking of a clock face, if the main entrance is at 12 o'clock, the other two entrances are at 4 and 8 o'clock. During the audio description, we will name the 4 o'clock entrance as the right entrance and the 8 o'clock entrance as the left entrance. From 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock, two rows of seats have been removed to extend the stage space and provide areas for props to be located. We shall call these the left and centre notches. As I mentioned before, it is a fast-paced production. There are four actors taking on 120 characters in over 30 scenes set in many different locations across England and Scotland. The play is filled with quick costume changes, speedy transitions from scene to scene, happening on stage in front of the audience, and sometimes with a little of their help. On occasions, the actor play their scenes in the aisles, in the theatre seating banks, and on the promenade gangway. The overall design of the play appears to be minimal. The set items are representative, with the audience filling in the rest of the picture for themselves. As such, the actors will often mime opening doors and windows. Separate rooms in a flat or hotel will be defined by distinct pools of light, with the audience imagining the walls between them. Or a slamming of a door is created by purely a sound effect. I shall now describe the set itself. The stage floor, following down to the entrances, is covered in a black vinyl. Around the central stage area is a simple circle made up of random letters, numbers and symbols in white. A few are dotted in a poppy red. The set mainly comprises of different seats, a table and lamps. Three types of chairs are used. One brown leather armchair with a white and red plaid pattern on the seating cushion. One wooden captain's swivel chair on casters that tilts back. And several plain wooden chairs. Some are simply varnished and others are painted in a bright poppy red. There is a wooden kitchen table with a plain varnished top and red painted legs on casters. As the set is representative of the location, the same piece of set or prop is used for different scenes. For example, four chairs might be set in a square facing in one direction to create a car, but then they're also used as the general seating in the assembly hall. A frying pan may be used to cook a fish over an imaginary hob in one scene, and then later in the play it's a steering wheel and a windscreen wiper on the car. In addition to the tables and chairs, there are three multifunctional framed and wheeled units painted in black. At the bottom is an open cupboard to which props are stored. On the top is a frame about 1.5 metres tall with a rail, so the actors can quickly grab items of costume, other props or hang curtains. And this keeps the speedy transition from location and character to character. Two of the units have the frame on the outside, and one has a bar in the middle. The actors often stand on top of the cupboard sections when in various locations. When they are not in use, these units are stored in the notches around the edge of the stage. I shall now go on to describe how each of the major locations in the play is created in this roller coaster of a production. When the play begins, there is a clothes rail in the centre of the stage, and around the edge are the assortment of chairs which are positioned in line with the front row of the audience. The leather armchair is in the centre notch, and the captain's swivel chair is in the left notch. The first scene is set in Hannay's apartment. There is a large armchair, a metal drinks trolley with a decanter half full of whiskey and two glasses. One of the wheeled units in the centre notch represents a window, and a red roller blind is pulled down from the frame. The music hall is created by placing a wheeled unit in each of the notches. Red theatre drapes hang from the frame, and a set of two shell-shaped theatre floor lights sit on top of each cupboard section. For the train, the three units are placed parallel to each other to form the seating in two carriages. A copper-coloured light hangs above each of these carriages. To create the fourth bridge, the three units are turned lengthwise next to each other. The two outside units are tipped 45 degrees onto the side, creating the impression of metal diagonal girders of the fourth railway bridge. For the Scottish Moors, the whole stage is clear, except for some low-level smoke to create the impression of mist. We then come across a crofter's cottage. The unit in the main notch has red tartan curtains hanging from each side to form a window. In front of the left notch, the table is set with three chairs to form a kitchen. A kerosene-style lamp with a brass bottom and opaque glass shade hangs from above. The armchair is moved to the left of the left entrance. The remainder of the first half of the play is set in a baronial hall. The interior hallways are suggested by creating corridors of light on a bare stage, and the audience uses their imagination to fill in the setting. For the study, the table remains where it was from the crofter's cottage, and the wooden chairs are replaced with a single swivel captain's chair. A blotter and an Art Nouveau table lamp sit on top of the wooden table. When the actors mime opening and closing the door from the study, loud jazz music and flashing coloured lights come on from the direction of the left entrance. The second half begins in the sheriff's office. A unit placed in front of the main entrance has a white tablecloth draped over it. On this stands a tray with a silver teapot, a china cup and saucer, and a plate of biscuits. Red curtains hang from the frame. For the assembly hall, five wooden chairs are placed facing a wheeled unit in front of the left entrance. A banner saying, "Vote McCorkadale," is hung from the unit. The actors stand on top of the unit when addressing their audience. We also visit the reception and bedrooms of the McGarrigle Hotel. For the reception, a table is placed at 5 o'clock. A guest book, pen, call bell and sign saying vacancies sits on top of the table. For the bedroom, two wheeled units are pushed together in front of the main entrance. A bedspread and two pillows are draped over them to form a bed. And above the bed is a lamp with five tasseled lampshades. Another unit is wheeled in at 9 o'clock. A log fire sits on top of this to create an open hearth fireplace, and two wooden chairs are placed in front of it. Finally, we go to the London Palladium. This is the same setup as the music hall in the first half, but without the theatre floor lights. I shall now hand over to Pam, who will explain the costumes and how in this comedy just four actors play over 120 characters.
The four actors are familiar to New Vic audiences, having appeared in a variety of shows here before. They're Rebecca Brewer, Gareth Cassidy, Michael Hugo and Isaac Stanmore. The main character in The 39 Steps is 35-year-old pipe-smoking Richard Hannay, who after discovering an unknown woman has died in his apartment, goes on the run pursued by all manner of suspicious characters. Can he evade capture and clear his name of murder before it's too late? Handsome Richard Hannay is played by Isaac Stanmore. Of average height and build, he has short, dark, slightly wavy hair and a pencil moustache. He's smartly dressed in a three-piece Harris tweed suit that has a beige dogtooth weave with coloured check. His shirt is white, his tie rust colour, and his Argyle socks and brogue shoes brown. He has a brown and rust checked overcoat and a camel-coloured trilby with a small feather tucked into a black band. In the audio description, we'll call him Hannay. The only female actor, Rebecca Brewer, plays Annabelle Schmidt, Pamela, and Margaret. In the short opening scene of the show, where all four actors prepare the stage, Rebecca wears an emerald green blouse, black waistcoat trousers and male lace shoes, and the auburn wig she wears for Annabella. As Annabella Schmidt, she keeps the green blouse, has matching trousers and black high-heeled Mary Jane shoes. To this outfit she adds a black wool cape with a lizard brooch attached and a feathered collar. On top of her short, neat, styled wig, a small black felt 1930s hat is perched at an angle. Her lipstick is bright brick red. She carries a gold, black and cream Art Deco handbag. Annabella is a confident, smart, attractive woman in her 30s. I will call her Schmidt in the audio description. Pamela is of similar age to Annabella and even more beautiful. As Pamela, Rebecca's hair is covered by a short blonde wig styled in soft curls. Her lipstick is soft coral red. She wears a mid-calf-length turquoise dress with cream cuffs and a wide cream wing collar with covered buttons and small bow. She has a dark brown wool coat with sharp shoulders and a small brown felt 1930s hat with a short feather at the back. The black-heeled shoes she wore as Annabella are retained and she wears nude stockings. She carries a mink brown handbag. For pretty, naturally fresh-looking Margaret, Rebecca's own long auburn hair is held in two plaits falling onto her shoulders and no makeup. She wears a mid-calf-length beige checked wool skirt, a white blouse, dusky pink cardigan and flat brown sandal shoes. At night time she has a pastel blue dressing gown. A Scottish girl, Margaret is the young wife of an old crofter. Michael Hugo and Gareth Cassidy both play a multitude of parts, mainly paired as comic characters. They're of similar stature, although Michael is a little thinner and Gareth a little taller. They have the same close-cut hairstyle and balding patch, Gareth's hair being the fairer of the two. As the show opens, they're wearing basic costumes of black trousers, white shirt, black bow ties and waistcoats, and black lace shoes and socks. Throughout the play, various garments or items are added and changed according to the characters being played. Everything needs to be easy to put on and remove, as changing characters can be very quick and on stage. Sometimes they simply remove one hat and grab another in the fast pace of a scene. Michael's first character is the compere in a Cockney music hall, working with Gareth's first character, Mr. Memory. Both wear dinner jackets with pocket handkerchiefs. The compere's black, Mr. Memory's burgundy velvet. Mr. Memory stands with his arms bent in front of him. As he recalls facts to answer questions posed in his act, he performs a robotic, jerky routine with his arms and hands as he mutters to himself. This ends with him bending before drawing his arms up to his original stance. Next, there are a pair of henchmen in trench coats and black trilbies. They're also salesmen, sitting on a train with small cases on their knees, One wears a light brown jacket and bow tie, the other a Prince of Wales jacket and blue and white spotted bow tie. They're often policemen, sometimes just adding a helmet for a few seconds. Other times they wear dark blue high-collared capes with whistles as well as helmets. On one occasion, Michael is a police inspector wearing an appropriate jacket. One of them also appears in an entrance holding two coat hangers with capes and helmets to suggest many police. When pilots with moustaches, they wear leather jackets with sheepskin on the inside of the collars and leather flying helmets with goggles. They fly their imaginary planes, sitting on the steps halfway up aisles across the stage from each other. In Act Two, they play two very old Scottish men at an assembly hall. Gareth is the fussy and doddery Dunwoody, master of ceremonies. He has half-moon glasses and a curly white-haired toupee held on by elastic, which often slips. He's rather bent in posture and wears an old burgundy cardigan over a Fair Isle knitted top and a multicoloured neck rag. Michael has a wiry, white-haired wig for the even more doddery chairman, Macquarie, who has one eye partially closed. He wears a shabby brown cardigan with holes at the elbows and a woolly tie. Both men frequently stand with their hands in their cardigan pockets. On two occasions, they play husband and wife characters. Professor and Mrs. Jordan, a couple established in country life at Alt na Shellach, and Mr. and Mrs. McCarrigal, proprietors of a small hotel. Michael is the charming, cultured Professor Jordan in a mustard-coloured check three-piece suit with fob watch, open-neck shirt and cravat, brown brogues and round glasses. His hair is slicked down. Gareth is neat and proper Mrs. Jordan in a tweed skirt and jacket, silk neck scarf, argyle socks and a short dark wig styled as a crown plait. She walks with small, precise steps. In another scene, Gareth is bagpipe playing Mr. McGarrigal in an orange and black tartan kilt with sporran, white shirt with flouncy lace cuffs, a light blue tweed waistcoat and orange hunting socks. He wears a green shanty hat and has dark red sideburns and full beard. His rather timid wife is played by Michael in a tartan pleated skirt, Peter Pan collared blouse, beige cardigan, cream stockings, glasses, and a reg wig styled with a bun on the top of her head. As Mrs. McGarrigal, he purses his lips and holds his clenched hands up in front of him. Michael also plays another woman, landlady Mrs. Higgins, this time wearing a pale green turban over hair in rollers. He pulls his trousers above his knees so they can't be seen under a green dress and apron. Other characters Michael plays are a porter wearing a peaked cap and a crofter wearing a mustard knitted waistcoat, rough tweed jacket, dark green overcoat and knitted red scarf. The crofter has plenty of bushy grey hair, a beard and moustache. He wears a cap and carries a crook. His nightwear is a striped high-necked long flannel shirt and wee Willy Winkle hat. Michael's last part, in a wig, is as the sheriff, in a black sheriff's jacket and black and white tie. A judge's wig completes his outfit. Gareth also plays a milkman in a white coat and peaked cap, a paperboy in woolly scarf and green tweed cap, a character in a Viking hat, a cow with a straw hat on top of the Viking hat, a radio announcer, and Chief Inspector Albright with a moustache and wearing an overcoat and trilby. Finally, they return to just their basic costumes when they are ukulele players at the Palladium. There's some fighting in the play, where those involved don't actually fight each other, but rather mime their actions at a distance apart. There's also a few slow motion episodes. The overall style of the production is heightened, exaggerated and physical, not naturalistic. At times the action is enhanced by pastiche-style music that could have been underscoring a melodrama or film noir movie of the period. As the action flows at a quick pace with new characters appearing in this comedy, don't be surprised if the unexpected happens, and there's sure to be lots of laughter from the audience. We hope you enjoy yourself at the audio-described performance of The 39 Steps, and in the end, you too will find out what The 39 Steps are. That concludes the introduction, but please listen on for the production credits. Teresa Heskins is director of this New Vic production. The designer is Dawn Allsop, and the musical director and composer James Atherton. The lighting and projection designer, Daniela Beatty. Sound designer, Alex Day. Choreographer, Beverly Norris Edmonds. Steve Hall is the company stage manager, and Ashley German, the deputy stage manager. Set and made props by the New Vic Workshop, and costumes by the New Vic Costume Department. We look forward to welcoming you to the New Vic. May I remind you that we will inform you later about the time of the touch tour.